Hey, it's Greg. Thanks for checking out Toronto Today. Joe Mihevec joins us on the show, Ward 10 counselor. We talk about plans for Ontario Place, where it could potentially go. There's a lot of people putting up a bit of a brick wall when talking about Ontario Place and its renovations, thinking it'll be too privatized, it'll be too expensive for the average Torontonian. Those are fair criticisms right now. We'll get his read on it. The return to public transit as well, a big factor, not just for Ontario Place, but all over the city. So we talk about that with him also coming up right now.
I think you'll have the insight to have the right answer for it. Will we really not know about the return to public transit until the fall? I think it'll be the most normal school year starting. I think it'll be the most normal. And that's just, that goes from, you know, junior kindergarten right up to being a university student at one of our great universities or colleges in the city. Will we not really know whether public transit is quote unquote back until September, October? It's hard to tell in the summer, right?
Well, no, it is possible to tell because we have a modeling that bases itself on historic patterns. So we know, for example, that the last stat that I saw was about 3 weeks old, and it is that we were tracking at about 60% now, okay, relative to what we had pre-pandemic. During the pandemic, we went as low as 20-30%, and that was the kick in the head to the city, to TTC and to the city's budget. And we're also noticing that the ridership was going up at that time. Again, this is 2-3 weeks old, mm-hmm, by about 2% a week. So we need to get, frankly, back up to that 100%. So it's not, we can compare this summer with last summer and the summers before the pandemic. And, you know, my guess is that we are on the right track. People are coming back. Whether we'll attain 100%, I don't think so. But it's going to take a year or two for that to fully come back.
I was thinking about that over the weekend. Given, you know, I'm driving around Saturday and you see gas prices in the 150s, and you're like, you feel relieved. Like you don't see that two in front of the number followed by another two. Like that was, nobody wants to pay $2.20 a liter for gas. But it got me thinking. Now, is this make driving when people are going downtown for a ball game, a concert, whatever? There's so much to do in the city. Thank goodness when the X comes back. But would people rather stay in their cars? I can't tell if higher gas prices was sort of the impetus to go, oh, we're taking public transit instead. Like, we don't want to pay those prices. It's probably a little bit of both. But when I see prices that high, maybe people are like, well, I'm not going to do anything. I can't even afford to go to the X if I've got to pay $2.20 a liter.
Well, it is interesting. Gas prices have a direct impact on public transit ridership. Of course, if gas prices are up, if it costs more to take your car, then people are going to, who have an option. Now, not everyone has an option. More people are going to take public transit. At the same time, if you raise TTC fares, then you see a jump over into a private automobile use. And that's what we don't want. And that's why the city, when it has its budget deliberations, and you know, there's that debate whether we raise it 10 cents or 15 or 20 cents. And we know that once we do that, and sometimes we're driven to do that by revenue shortfalls, we know that that's really going to hit the people who can make a choice, and they'll jump into cars. So it's always finding that balance between public transit ridership and private automobile. The lower we can make public transit cost, the better it is to decongest the roads. People will then flock in greater numbers to public transit. That's exactly what we want to see.
That's why I enjoy our conversation. That's such a sensible, logical answer. I think everyone can understand, yet it's got some depth to it and practical. I'm a big believer in practicality as opposed to platitudes. Joe Mihevec's our guest, by the way, on Toronto Today. So I want to ask you about Ontario Place. You grew up a Toronto kid. When you run for office in 91, to me, Ontario Place is still thriving, really thriving in the late 80s towards the early 90s. At some point in time, that stopped, it changed. And as you know, there's a lot of debate, dispute. I don't know if there's controversy, but there's a lot of debate, dispute about the new plans that are on the table that were kind of set forth more by the provincial government. But obviously, they'd love the city's approval of it. What do we need to know about what's on the table for Ontario Place? I've seen some criticism that there just won't be enough public land, that it's privatized. But I'd say we have to generate revenue, and we had to do something with it. It can't stay as stagnant as it's been the last 15 years.
Yeah, well, let me say, maybe you were part of that crowd as well. I've enjoyed in the 1980s, 1990s, so many great concerts and great events down by Ontario Place. It really was a jewel. And I don't know what the books were like at that time, but it really was a jewel in Toronto's side. Now, the interesting thing on the governance side is that it is not a City of Toronto park space. It is a provincially owned facility, unlike Exhibition Place, which is owned by the City of Toronto. I think one of the things that confronted virtually every mayor is whether we should try to make a deal with the province and put it under one ownership. In other words, either the province take it or the city takes it over as a whole. So you can do joint programming, you can govern it together as one big, large piece. And that's frankly what I think at the end of the day, sooner or later, one government is going to say, okay, we have to put this under joint ownership. In the meantime, then you have this, you have the province basically, yes, trying to add new life to it. I can appreciate that. But the problem is that you cannot privatize park space.
Right.
That's the big elephant in the room. And when two-thirds of the site in the current proposal is going to go to a single operator, and you'll have to pay, the stat I saw was something like $40 basically to enter that site, then that's going to kill a lot of people's ability to gain entry. Now, you know, when we went to some concerts in the last little while, we paid an admission fee. That's fine. But the park is public, except for those times when it has a restricted use for special events. We understand it. That happens in all the parks. But when you privatize it 24/7 and you only let people who pay in, then you know what? You can do that. You can do that. Find a field, find a place, buy it if you're a private sector operator, and make your dream come true. But not in a public place, and especially on the waterfront.
Yeah,
Greg, at the last council meeting, we approved 24,000 in one meeting. 24,000 units of housing in the City of Toronto. 25%, so 6,000 of which were by the waterfront. 6,000 new apartments going in, and this is in one meeting at City Hall. The kinds of densities that you're going to see down there, and then you're going to have the subway going down there. Lots of people want access to that waterfront. So whether to go this way in a rapidly intensifying downtown waterfront, I don't think is a good idea.
Joe Mahavik, who's joining us, of course, city councilor for Ward 10. You bring up so many interesting points about Ontario Place. And you mentioned subway down there. I think that's the one thing with Exhibition Place is obviously the GO train gets down there at Exhibition Place. It'll let off people for C&E. It always does for Toronto FC games. But yeah, like that walk across to those parking lots. I don't know if we have enough parking when there's a bunch of stuff happening at once. It happens so rarely that that's just probably life in a big city, Joe. But I know it's something that people talk about, consumers do, is lack of parking down there.
No, well, absolutely, that's an issue, and I do actually support that subway line. It is going to be a mess of a construction process, but 10 years from now, our children and our grandchildren will thank this generation for putting it from Don Mills in the east along, well, then it hits almost the waterfront in the east by the Don River, and then it goes across Queen Street, and it'll go down into the Exhibition Place. So just a stone's throw from Ontario Place. Maybe it will make the need for people to take their cars down to the X a little bit less. That's hopefully the case.
Yeah.
Also at the same time, Greg, what's happening is, and this also is a very good provincial project, is the electrification of the line from Kitchener-Waterloo down into University, into Union Station. And that's going to bring millions of people over a year period into the downtown as well. And one of the stops will also be Exhibition Place. So all the soccer games, of course, a Canadian National Exhibition, which is coming up shortly. Public transit is going to be the way that area is going to be served. And that's going to roll out over the next five to 10 years. Very, very good projects. But as a result of that good public transit, what's going to happen is, guess what? Build it and they will come. They're going to be coming to the X. You're going to see Ontario Place and the X really welcome attractions for the area of not just Toronto, but the GTA. And so you want to make sure that you have as much of that land as available as possible to as many people as possible. And that's why you can't privatize a section of either Exhibition Place or the Ontario Place. We need to have them broadly available to the broad public.
It's a great question from a listener who just texted in and asked, enjoying listening to you, would that subway stop be on the water side of Lakeshore, like as in the Bud Stage side, or would it be on the BMO Field side?
It would be on the BMO Field side, okay. Just over the BMO Field, where you have the current station now.
I got where Exhibitions, the GO train lets off at Exhibition, it would be.
That's correct.
Interesting.
Yeah.
That's, oh my goodness. Yeah, I know. It's way in the distance. It's going to cost money, but you're right. For my kids, for my grandkids, whenever that is, like 50 years from now, that's like, they'll thank us for putting that in, just like I think we thank previous generations for the infrastructure we have for public transit. All right, let me get to police and cyclists in Hyde Park, especially. Cyclists and pedestrians want less law enforcement. Cops are saying people are out walking and cyclists are blowing through stop signs. People are having to be careful walking their dogs. I just don't like seeing all the anger and eye rolling and annoyances. There probably isn't a simple solution to this, but what's been your reaction to it, Joe?
Well, what I call this is basically a United Nations moment. We all need to just tone it down and put on our United Nations hat and recognize that, you know, there's no comment that I've seen out there that I haven't agreed with. The cyclists are angry because they're being stopped and they're saying, why are you picking on us? And why aren't you going to those protected bicycle lanes where people, where delivery trucks are parking and where construction vehicles are parking? And they kind of got a point. And then you hear from pedestrians saying, well, these guys are going 30, 40K in Hyde Park and I'm just trying to go with my kid in my little stroller, and it's a bit dangerous. They've got a point as well. And really what needs to be happening here is there have to be some meetings. And I understand that the local councillor is engaging on this, and I can't imagine the mayor's office not also engaging on this. And just sitting down, the police, elected officials, Parks Department, and figuring it out. Like I can see saying something like, we will not enforce the speeding bylaw for Hyde Park, let's say between 6 a.m. and 9 a.m. or in the evening, some evening, restricted evening hours. But the rest of the time, then you just kind of develop a consensus. Okay, this is when everything has to slow down because that's when the kids are out. That's when the moms and dads are out and the families are out. And we don't want that collision. I had a friend whose mother died in colliding with a cyclist. So it does happen. Does happen, and that's unfortunate. And we don't want that to happen. So there is a legitimate concern there.
I agree. Take the temperatures down. Park the egos. Park the attitude. Park the chips on the shoulders, and try and get in the room. It's the only way. Only way anything ever gets solved. It doesn't matter if it's politics, a rock band, like get in a room, figure out where you can find some common ground. And we have to do that sooner than later.
Yeah. United Nations. It's a United Nations moment.
I hear that loud and clear. Joe, thank you so much for your time and your energy today. Really appreciate the conversation.
Great having a chat with you, Greg. All the best to you and to your listeners.
Thank you. I appreciate that too. Ward 10 Councillor Joe Mahavik.
Hi, it's Shauna, and I might be a bad parent because my kids think french fries are vegetables.
Hey, it's Ryan, and I might be a bad parent because I went out for wings when my wife was in the hospital after giving birth.
Johnny here. I might be a bad parent because in my house, the tooth fairy gives pocket change.
But we're not alone. Len emailed us and said his six-year-old daughter's Tarzan moment going from love seat to lazy boy by curtains made him more proud than any dance recital.
And Andy left his two-year-old at the rink.
All right, guys, I'm sure we're not alone. Like Andy's kid.
For stories and confessions like this, make sure you check out our podcast.
It's called Bad Parents, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
I left a glove at the rink.